Just a quick note, we'll be right back to the podcast. I want to let you know about a new network for beer industry professionals. It's called the Beer Business Finance Association. It's an organization of financial pros, just like you, looking to improve financial results, increase profitability, connect with your peers, and share best practices. So I'd love to tell you a little bit more about this. If you are interested in learning more, please email me, Carrie@beerbusinessfinance.com. That's K-A-R-Y at beerbusinessfinance.com. Or you can visit bbfassociation.org. That's bbfassociation.org to learn more. Welcome to the Craft Brewery Financial Training Podcast, where we combine beer and numbers to provide you with tips, tactics, and strategies so that you can improve financial results in your brewery. I'm your host, Carrie Shumway, a CPA, CFO for a brewery, and a former CFO for a beer distributor. I've spent the last 20 years using finance to improve financial results in our beer business. Now I'm helping other craft breweries to do the same. Are you ready to take your brewery financial results to the next level? Okay, let's get started. Today on the podcast, we talk with Bump Williams from Bump Williams Consulting. Bump is going to share insights, analysis, and results, an early peek here from their three-tier survey of brewers, distributors, and retailers. They asked one question: what are your strategies for growth in the upcoming year? So Bump summarizes that information. What are the strategies for retailers, distributors, and brewers? And looks for overlap or common strategies, common thinking, and how the different tiers are striving for growth. And the results may surprise you. So I would encourage you to listen to this podcast, take notes, and reach out to Bump Williams if you want to learn more about the specifics of your market. So for now, please enjoy this conversation with Bump Williams from Bump Williams Consulting. Mr. Bump Williams, welcome back to the podcast.
Carrie, thanks a million for having me. I always enjoy talking to you, whether it's casually at a bar or over a beverage or doing a podcast. I always enjoy being with you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And it's great to have you here. So we've had a couple of conversations in the past on the recorded variety on the podcast, and I'll link those in the show notes so people can check those out. But for folks who aren't familiar with you or your company, why don't you give us some background?
So 15 years ago, almost to the day, and today's Friday the 13th. So I didn't choose Friday the 13th. October 15th of 2008, I had retired from working at IRI as head of their global consulting beverages, the whole beverage vertical. And I was, like I said earlier, I'm just going to fly fish with my grandkids and play hardball and be done. You know, do whatever the wife tells me to do. Those are my three objectives, all right? Fly fish, do whatever the grandkids tell me to do, and whatever my wife tells me to do. Probably not in that order, but you get it. Anyway, I started to get calls from retailers and some manufacturers and some distributors and said, hey, could you help us make sense of the data or of what consumers are doing and help us build our portfolio or do a better job with innovation or assortment and variety? Or what do I do with pricing? You know, can you do a valuation of this business for me? I see if I want to get into it or buy it. So we did that. And Carrie, like I said, that was 15 years ago on October 15th. So we've added a lot of smart people. We've expanded our depth and breadth of customers. It used to be brewers, always distributors, and always retailers. We've expanded that because the industry's changed so dramatically, I think, over 15 years, that we've now added vintners and distillers and non-alcoholic and energy drinks and health and wellness companies on the manufacturer side. Distributors, I've tried to limit our work with the beer distribution network, but I don't think that there's a beer-only distributor left in America. If there's just a beer-only distributor anymore, I don't know how he or she is going to survive, because it's not about beer. It's about beverages in general. And it's such a, consumers are just buying everything from beer, wine, spirits, energy drinks, all the way down the line. So our distributor network has just changed their portfolio. And then retailers, It always started out with the large ACV grocery, and then we went to club stores and then mass merchandisers. Convenience has always been a key part of our retailer group. And we now have 132 retailers that every quarter or twice a year or an annual review will give a report on what's happening in the industry. And that's, it just makes it so much fun because I don't know. It's like I was telling earlier, is I hated to work within certain guardrails. You can only do these three things. Well, if I do these three things, I'm not giving my clients, who happen to be my friends, I'm not giving them a good return on investment, because if they want me to do these three things, but there's so many variables outside of those three that are affecting the business, give me free rein to go out and look at a bunch of stuff. And like I said, it's the answer. I'll get to the answer eventually. It's not going to be a straight line. It'll be a serpentine, circuitous way to get there. But I'm going to touch every little variable out there, and I'll say, here's what's going on. So that's what we do for a business. And I wake up every day, and I'm almost 70. I'm pushing 70. So people go, when you going to retire? I'm saying, I don't want to retire. It's so much fun. I still like this stuff. I pick and choose where I'm going to go now. And I've got a bunch of great people in the company across the country, Portland, Maine, to Portland, Oregon, that I can, if there's a California event or a Portland, Oregon event, I don't want to go to it because it's too far for me to fly out. I'll ask somebody, hey, BK, can you go to this one? Or up in New England, I don't feel like driving up to David, can you go? Yeah. So I've surrounded myself with a lot smarter people than me. And they make this job, still makes this job so much fun. And like I said, it's full circle. Working with you and doing something like this is just, it's an honor for me. So I love it. That's the BWC company in a nutshell.
I love it too. It's great stuff. You know, I love how you take that holistic approach to it, where we do tend to get myopic. You know, if we're a brewery, we sell beer, we focus only on beer. When I like your perspective that it's really a total beverage. You got to expand back, and you got to look at what's happening with total beverage. You got to look at all the different, you know, tiers within that. And then try to tease out what's actually happening. And that's stuff you love to do. You got a tremendous wealth of experience and a great team. And so, yeah, let's get into it. What we wanted to focus on for today was you guys do this really cool thing, the 3-tier growth strategies survey. And hopefully I get that name approximately right. But why don't you tell folks, like, what is this survey? How does it work? And what's the type of information? And then what are some of the insights you're gleaning from that?
All right. So I guess I'll kind of go back in time again, and I think about when I started the company, and I had October 15th of 08, I got calls from four companies, 3 retailers and 1 manufacturer. And it was pretty straightforward. Hey, can you do this for me? And I'd send them an invoice. Hey, it's going to cost you $1,000. It's going to cost you a case of beer. We did barter. We did a lot of bartering back then. So anyway, and I did that. And then as 2009 opened up, and this is the year after the Miller Coors joint venture and the year after InBev had purchased Anheuser-Busch, dynamics had changed. And a lot of folks started to reach out and say, could you help me understand or how to use information? Could you talk to me about consumer purchase behavior? Can you talk to me about the relationship between price elasticity and volume? Could you help me understand the impact of innovation? Could you help me understand what's in a beer shopper's basket? So it just exploded, and it's what I liked to do. I loved getting my hands dirty in the data. And then one of my biggest customers back in 09 said, hey, listen, I like the work that you're doing, and I don't mind paying the invoice because it's always good to get paid, right? So I don't mind paying the invoice, but he goes, do me a favor. He said, when you send me an invoice, tell me something about the industry that I don't know. Tell me something that's happened over the past 4 weeks that's not part of this analysis. Consumer purchase behavior, frequencies up, market basket sizes up. He said, just do that. And I thought it was a good idea. I really did. So in 09, every time we sent out an invoice, and our roster of clients, we were fortunate enough to get more and more clients growing. I sent my invoices out every month, January or the first day of every month. And I would write a little monthly analysis. You know, here's what happened this month. Here's what you have to look forward to. Here's things that you ought to be thinking about. And I attached my invoice to that monthly letter, Kerry. And it just seemed like that old Mary Poppins, a little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down or something. And that's what it was. And it just caught on. And then I started thinking, as I started to work with my manufacturers and my distributors and my retailers, I would sit down in August, September, October, and I would ask them, tell me what's on your mind for next year. Tell me the things you want me to put on my to-do list for you for the following year so that I stay focused on your business goals and not where I want to go, but where you want to go. And I noticed in 2009 that my manufacturing, mostly brewers, they wanted to go left. And my distributor customers, they wanted to go up the middle. And then my retail customers, they wanted to go right. And I'm saying, this is a misalignment of growth strategies. And I said, I don't think we're going to have a lot of growth or a lot of win-win-win scenarios if people are going different directions. So in 2009, and I know I did it in like November, December of 2009, I sent out a question to all my customers. And I simply said, hey, could you list for me your top three growth strategies for 2000, at that time, 2010 and 2011? You want to throw 12 in there, knock yourself out. And I would get all these responses back from each of these three tiers. And I would go through the data. And if someone said, I'm going to focus on innovation, that was the most commonly mentioned growth strategy for manufacturers, that would be the number one growth strategies for the manufacturers. And distributors might say, I'm really focused on my core brands. So core brands would be the number one growth strategy back in 2009 for the middle tier. And retailers would be talking about developing high end. And that would be the number one thing for the retailer piece. And anyway, Kerry, in January 2010, I think was my very first three-tier growth strategy letter. And I simply listed out the top 10 growth strategies for each of the three tiers. Now flash forward to where we are today. And we've just now started to send that questionnaire survey out to all of our customers. And that roster of customers for the manufacturers is no longer just brewers. It's not Elk. It's vendors, it's spirits-based companies, it's energy drink companies. It's broadened out. We've got about, I don't know the exact number, I should, but I don't, but we've got just under 500 manufacturing customers, and there's still about 350 distributors. And then our retailers, last year we had 126, we've got 132 retailers today. And so I've just sent that survey out to those folks. And I started to get some feedback in on how the stars are aligning across these three tiers. And I'm looking at some of the data right now, and it's no different. It's still, there is some alignment in growth strategies, especially when it comes to like flavors or portfolio strategies or the focus on core brands. But the big divergence, and I don't know if David talked about this at the presentation you saw him at, and that, was that, I don't know if it was Brewbound.
Brewbound, was it? Yep.
Okay, all right. So I don't know if David talked about it, but the big question that everybody's facing right now is what I'll call revenue growth management. How do I, in light of today's economy, inflation, interest rates, credit card debt, gas prices, cost of goods, labor. I mean, I don't think the UPS new contract and what's going on with UAW and what's going to happen with a lot of our brewers who are going to be negotiating union contracts. I don't think what happened at UPS is going to be helping us at all. It's not going to be helping anybody in the manufacturing business. So that's this revenue growth management is what we're looking at. The new CEOs of today, they just want to take price up. I want to take price, 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 because I want to, every 90 days, I need to turn in a an earnings report to Wall Street, and I need to have a return on shareholder investment. Price. The older CEOs are saying, no, it's not about that. It's about volume. It's about keeping the machines efficient. It's about turning out, you know, ungodly amounts of trailers and cases and barrels. And that's what I have to do. So there's a bifurcation in growth strategies at the manufacturer level between pricing and volume. And then it trickles down. Obviously, the distributors, they get price increases. Their cost of doing business is going through the roof. There's no way that a distributor can pass along all of their increased costs to the retailer, because the retailer would then reflect that back to you and me as we go to buy our, I was going to say a six pack, but that's a joke. As we go to buy our suitcase or our 750 or our 1.75, it doesn't trickle down that way. So that's what we're looking at right now. It's like, do I take price or do I promote for volume? And right now, and I had a little curveball on this on the 2024, 2025 growth strategies. It's, I said, hey, listen, I want to know what your annual strategies are for calendar 24 and 25. But I said, tell me what you're going to do in Q4 this year to try and bolster volume, try and build foot traffic or retain shopper loyalty. What are you going to do? And the vast majority of early results, and again, I don't have all the feedback from my customers yet, but they're saying, we're going to promote the hell out of the category. I have to drive volume. I have to do it because sales are down, cost of goods are up, frequency of shopping's down a little bit. I've got to find a way to get shoppers into my store because I can't lose the loyalty of my young family or big family or the new family that just moved into the neighborhood. I can't lose them to the store across the street or the class of trade across the street. So I've got different strategies, but everybody's looking at promotions, and that's what Q4 typically has been about, is how do I in 90 days make up for all the shortfalls in the previous three quarters? And that's what we've seen right now. And there's a myriad of things that have impacted the category, not just pricing, but we've seen legacy brands just take a bullet, and we've seen innovation not really being that successful. And we've seen consumers walking away from the beer category and trying other things. And we've seen frequency of shopping, I talked about, going down because my credit card debt is maxed out. I can't afford to take on any more debt. And the interest rates are so high right now that, anyway, there's a whole lot of things. And I'll send it to you, Carrie, but we did a retailer board meeting, and I had asked all my retailers, and again, 132 of them, there's a lot more retailers than 132, but mine do, the vast majority of volume. And I asked them, I said, what's keeping you awake at night? And they gave me a laundry list of probably 35, 40 things that I put together this one page. And like I said, I'll send it to you. And it's just everything around the board. It's like, holy smokes. I didn't think about that. And when you add up these little headaches and you add them all up, if these 40 little headaches or these little cuts, you add them up, man, you got a massive scar that needs to get stitched up, or you got a, it's not a little headache, man, it's a wicked migraine headache. And that's where we are right now. So it's a very long answer to your question, but the early results of our three-tier study are coming in. And when I look at the manufacturer side, it is all about driving profits, not volume, but profits. Okay, I got it. I understand that part. And there's 10 things that add up to this summary of driving profits. And by the way, Carrie, you're the only person I've spoken to about this early read. So you this is your exclusive, not the Journal, not the Times, not the Post. Nobody, you got it. So
I got the scoop. I love it.
You got a scoop. That could be a new nickname for you, scoop. So
scoop. Well, that's awesome. I appreciate that. Well, let me ask you this. So I love that example. First of all, I love the premise of the study, right? So we're out there operating sometimes in our own silos, right? Yeah. Here's what I'm going to do for my growth strategy. Isn't that great? When we operate in a larger ecosystem of our industry, whereby, as you've already articulated, other people that affect our business's prosperity maybe going in a different direction. And I love how, I'm just going to repeat what you had said earlier, which is when you've done this study in the past, an example might be the brewery is very focused on innovation, but the distributor to whom they're selling to are very focused on their core brand. So they don't really care about your innovation. And then the retailers are focused on your high end. So if your innovation happens to be high end or the core brand, then good. But by and large, we're all going in different directions. So I think number one, that's a very interesting insight for people to take away from this is, just because you think you got a great growth strategy doesn't mean that the person you're selling to is on page. How might you think about, maybe before we get into more particulars, like how someone could use this concept? Like, what is this? Do we talk? How might you use this? So, because we had talked off air, like, you know, I can tell you this information, but it's really up to you to do something with it. What might you recommend people do with it if they have that sort of insight?
So I usually give answers in buckets of 3, 5, or 10. That's my DNA. And I can only think of two off the top. And maybe as I'm talking about the two, a third will pop into my mind. But the first thing I encourage, at least from a distributor and a manufacturer perspective, is you sit down with one another and you ask the brewer or the distiller or the vintner, ask the distributor, hey, what are your growth strategies? Tell me some of your pain points. And there should be a dialogue right there so that the distributor knows where their manufacturer partner wants to go. The manufacturer partner knows where their biggest customer, the distributor, where they want to go. That's like step one. And obviously, I encourage every manufacturer, distributors, the good distributors, do the same thing. But I encourage my manufacturers, make a date with your retailers. It doesn't have to be all of them, but it should be the ones that move the needle for you. You should talk to your retail customers about their growth strategies, about the role that beer, wine, or spirits or non-alcoholic plays in their growth strategies. What role does your portfolio play in helping them to achieve their goals? If there's an understanding amongst the manufacturer, the distributor, and the retailer about where everyone wants to go, it's a lot easier to get an alignment of strategies. That's the first thing I encourage. And it's not that hard to do. And if you have a hard time doing it or you don't know who to talk to, give me a shout and I'll help you out with that, because it's what we do for a job. The second thing is, and I think that your point about being myopically oriented has been a problem. A lot of our manufacturing customers, when they ask me to give them a review of their business, they want me to stick to spirits, or they want me to stick to just wine or beer. I prefer, and most of my clients have acquiesced to my request to say, don't look at it myopically. Let's look at total beverage alcohol, or let's look at total beverage trends. Let's look at that. And then we ask about, you know, your growth strategies. Well, Bump, it's going to be about innovation. It's going to be about attracting new shoppers to our core portfolio. It's going to be about increased merchandising support. It's going to be about a development of flavors or capitalizing on health and wellness. Awesome. That's great. Have you spoken to Hershey about that? Have you spoken to M&M Mars? Have you spoken to Ocean Spray? Hey, have you spoken to these, to Procter & Gamble about logistics and operations efficiency? Have you spoken to people outside of the beverage alcohol world or the beer, wine, or spirits world on how they do that? Because some of the greatest, I think, best in class or best practices of things that we strive to excel in, they already lie outside of our category. And nobody should be ashamed to ask for help or to seek advice from somebody else. And if we have to call in a Procter & Gamble, or we need to talk to a New Balance about consumer and how repeat purchases, or I bring in the Orvis Corporation to talk about attracting females into my portfolio, Jesus, do it. Because you all have common goals. You just don't know it yet because you're not exposed to them. So those are the things that I would highly encourage anybody who's listening, everybody that's listening to your podcast, or anybody that's in this industry, just go outside your comfort level a little bit and ask some basic questions.
Yeah, I love those. I think those are great points. So we mentioned, so in the early read on the recent survey, we talked about, you mentioned the, on the manufacturing side, you know, really the focus is on profits, and really on the top line, it's a question of, am I going to take a price increase or am I going to promote for volume?
Yep.
What are you seeing maybe on the distributor side, the wholesale side, that middle tier? What are they signaling? What's your early read on their growth strategies?
So when I look at the distributors, and again, we've got about 350, and if I've got 100 in, that's a pretty good early read. So maybe we're at 25, 30%. Right now, what they're talking about is, as I say, portfolio focus, and that's a very broad umbrella. But if I were to break that down to a couple of the driving points behind that one, it's how do I expand my total beverage portfolio? I think, and I'm kind of going to go outside my comfort level here a little bit, is I think some distributors this year learned an invaluable lesson that I can't depend on one supplier or one brand to keep the lights on anymore, because a lot of things happen outside of our control that derailed my growth strategies for this year. This Bud Light situation came out of nowhere, and all of the Anheuser-Busch distributors that depended on Bud Light or depended on Mich Ultra to get them to a certain revenue threshold or a profit threshold or an EBITDA level, that went away. Those distributors who had a very broad, diverse portfolio, and it's not just having the Constellation portfolio or the Boston Beer portfolio or the Mark Anthony. It's not just about having that. It's about having Ghost or Celsius or the Beast Unleashed. It's about having other brands in your portfolio. Man, if I had High Noon in my portfolio, I'm golden. It's about diversifying their portfolio so I'm not overly dependent on one supplier or one brand to make or break my numbers. That's what I see happening at the very top of the list. Obviously, when I expand my total beverage portfolio, it means including not just spirit brands. It's not just spirits, and it's not just spirits-based RTDs, because I happen to think that we're going to be coming to a quick halt on spirits-based RTDs in the next 2 years. But it's really about picking and choosing non-alcoholic brands that are just going to be appealing to this new generation of shoppers or drinkers. And I also think that from a distributor perspective, that they are looking at high velocity brands. They're looking at the long tail of brands that they might carry, brands or packages that they just don't need anymore. They had them, they're comfortable with them. They've got good relationships with the suppliers, and they just keep them in there. And when we do a cost of goods analysis, and I've seen the work that you do, Carrie, on yours, is I know which brands and which packages are making me money, and I know which ones aren't. I've got to make a business decision here to cut some of that tail so I can make room in my truck or in my warehouse for brands of the future. And I think that's where I see the distributors focused right now. That's why I call it a portfolio focus.
I like that. Yeah, kind of looking for, you know, because, yeah, it's the diversification, and it's a double-edged sword, right? Because we want to diversify so that you don't have all our eggs in one basket. You know, the Bud Light situation, unfortunate on many levels, to say the least. But it's sort of a lesson to, right? How do we avoid this in the future? Diversification is one way to do it. But doing it with, so we have the sort of counterbalance of the SKU proliferation. Like, how do we diversify, but we don't expand our portfolio to the point where now it's becoming unmanageable again?
So that's a million-dollar question. This is why I like talking with you, because you're smarter than I. Everybody's smarter than I, but you're way up there. And you asked the million-dollar question. And I don't know how far down the list it was in the top 10 growth initiatives for distributors, but I want to say it was six or seven. And they said, we have to use consumer purchase behavior, consumer insights to figure out where the consumer of today is going to be tomorrow. And there are some unbelievably strong, competent, knowledgeable, insightful distributors out there that every time I've got a meeting with them, the number one thing on their wish list is bring in some consumer purchase data. Talk to me about demographics. Talk to me about frequency. And more importantly, talk to me about market basket composition. And if people who are listening to this don't know what that means, it simply means if I'm a beer distributor and I'm looking at Modelo Especial, and I can carve out for you that Modelo Especial shopper and tell you every time he or she shops, who is she, how old is he, where does he shop, how much. I can tell you everything about him, but the most important thing is what's in that Modelo Especial market basket. When they go pick up a 12 pack of Modelo Especial, what else do they put into that market basket? That's just called market basket composition. And they want to know that. And I tell this to retailers too, is I don't want just displays of beer in the beer aisle. That's not where the beer shopper shops all the time. He or she may come in for a quickie and just go down the produce aisle. And if there's a stack of Modelo next to the limes or in the produce section, I'm going to pick that up as an impulse purchase. I got to know what's in that shopper's basket. And that's what distributors are. That's how you make that decision. If I'm not, take a looking at beer shopping occasions. If they're not buying beer, what else are they buying? Oh, they're buying low-cal, low-carb stuff. Oh, they're buying gluten-free stuff. Oh, they're buying health and wellness products. Oh, they're buying flavors. Oh, they're buying this type of energy drink. Now I know where I should be adding to my portfolio because it's going to address where the consumer is going to be tomorrow. That's how they do it. And it's this brand switching, brand loyalty, category switching, category loyalty. That's what we look at when we talk to our distributors and we talk to our manufacturers. And I happen to think we haven't talked about any similarities between the three tiers yet, but consumers are the key. If we don't understand our consumer, and I won't mention April 1st of this year, what happened, we didn't understand who our consumer was, but we don't know who our shopper is. We can't develop a brand. I can't develop a portfolio, and I sure as heck can't develop a merchandising strategy to have that product available for all the guests that come into my retail outlet. Consumers are the linchpin for all three tiers to come together.
We lose sight of that too, don't we? I mean, we focus a lot on what we want to do, what we want to produce, but yeah. You know, ultimately it's about that, who is your customer, and really understanding all the nuances of that. And those are great.
I'll say one other thing about it. All the companies that we work with, and I'm going to go to the manufacturer side right now. Oh, Bump, I don't know who the buyer is. I don't know how to build a presentation. I don't know how to ask questions of the retailers. To me, getting distribution is the easiest thing in the world. It's the easiest thing in the world. The hard part is keeping that distribution. And if I put a product, the wrong product, into the wrong store at the wrong time, there's no way I'm going to get a repeat purchase. And if you know the consumer, you know where he or she lives, you know what that retailer's growth strategies are. We want to attract this demographic. We want to increase our penetration of this particular ethnic group. We want to focus on these particular neighborhoods. And you know what your distributor's strengths are and what their sales routes look like and how they approach different stores. You've got a game plan. If I'm a new person, if I'm a new manufacturer, I don't want to be in every single store. I don't. And I don't want to have my whole portfolio in every single store. Because how do I know that my raspberry shopper is not going to buy my blueberry, or my blueberry is not buying my strawberry or my kiwi? It lowers the sales rates as I get further I guess I'll call it breadth of distribution, I'm not adding incremental purchase occasions. I'm simply switching from within my own portfolio. That lowers my sales rates or velocity for each of those SKUs. And a retailer, when they do their fall tweaks or their spring sets, they're going to draw a line and say, anything below two cases a week per store, we're out, we're done. And now you've just killed your whole portfolio. So right store, right package, right brand, right consumer, you're good to go. I think distribution, to get distribution is easy. And there's nobody that can get products in stores overnight better than our three-tier distribution, middle tier section. Nobody does it better. So anyway, that's the middle tier growth strategy.
All right. So we'll do a recap quickly. So on the manufacturing side,
I hope you're taking notes, because I'm not.
Oh boy, I'm a compulsive note taker, and I've got 3 pages full of scribble, which I'm going to hopefully organize for people to be able to make some sense of. But no, it's great. All right. So on the manufacturing side, we talked about price and profit and the distribution or middle tier. We're talking a lot about, you know, the focus on portfolio and diversification. And I love that, brands of the future. That's a really cool way to think about that. So let's talk about the retail side. So if those are two of the three tiers, not to mention the consumer who's, you know, really driving the bus here, what are you seeing, hearing, early reads on the retail side?
Yeah, this one hasn't changed much in the past couple of years. And it's nice to see that the retailers are still staying focused on what they said they were going to do a couple of years ago. For me, the early reads from our retailers, and it's been primarily grocery and convenience store right now. But we'll get the drug, we'll get the liquor stores, we'll get all those guys in later. But it's been all consumer focused. And that's, again, another wide net to throw. And some of the things that have come up under this consumer focus are consumer centric. You think about it, a retailer's only customer is the consumer. That's it. There's nothing else. I mean, there's nothing else. It's got to be someone walking through that door. So, yeah, hey, Bump, we want to drive foot traffic. Got it. Hey, we want to build loyalty. I got that. I understand that. That's almost an objective, but the strategy or tactics behind that is I'm going to focus on flavors, because consumers are buying more flavor-forward beverages now than ever before. So flavor is going to be a key strategy. I'm going to focus on high-end beverages. Well, what's high-end mean? Well, it's imports. Well, is it imports? Well, it's Mexican imports. Is it Mexican imports? It's Constellation. Okay. So we're going to focus on that one. Hey, I'm going to focus on Twisted Tea. I'm going to focus on White Claw. I'm going to focus on High Noon. Those are all high-end, high-margin, high-velocity categories that a retailer is going to use to get more shoppers into their store. What about health and wellness? Oh yeah, health and wellness is one of our growth strategies. So I've got to expand my portfolio on NA, not just 0.0, Heineken 0.0. Guinness now has a non-alcoholic. Athletic has a craft non-alcoholic. So yeah, we're going to focus on that one, because we think if our portfolio and our assortment are right, we're going to increase our shopper base. They might come in more frequently and buy more frequently, and they're going to drive their market baskets up. Yeah, we're okay. And if I know what my shopper likes to buy, I can take those brands, those flavors, those high velocity products, and I can do cross category promotions throughout the perimeter of the store. When you think about it, Kerry, center store, there's very little profit in that center store. All the profit comes from the perimeter. So if I'm a retailer and I'm working with my distributor and I'm working with my manufacturer on driving profits and market basket size and loyalty and making it convenient for my guests to get in and get out of the store and find what they want to find, it's all about the perimeter. And that's where I put my cross category promotion. So I would be putting my Twisted Teas out there. Why? Because I know my shelf space will be out of stock. I've got to have inventory. It's not going to be cold when it's on display, but at least I can take it home. Or I'm going to have my White Claw variety pack number 1, 2, and 3 on display with high-end cheese or with wine, because there's a lot of cross category, or chocolates on that one. A lot of cross category stuff on that one. I'm going to have my Michelob Ultra and my Athletic or my Heineken 00 over in that gluten-free area or over in that health and wellness area. I'm going to have my Holla Daily beer, or I'm going to have my Glutenberg beer. I'm going to have Ghostfish beer because it's gluten-free. That's going to go in my gluten-free aisle. That's what smart retailers are doing. And the other thing that I see within this retailer column is they're sensitive. 12 packs now are $21, $22. That's no longer a value. $20, I think, is if I'm at $19.99, I'm okay. I'm running on the threshold there. But once I crest that $20 in some states, Connecticut's got a bottle bill. Does Mass have one? Mass has one too, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah. So I know Connecticut's going up from a nickel to a dime a bottle. So that that pushes that price way above my comfort level. So 12 packs, not really a value package for me anymore. It used to be. It's not anymore. You'll see a lot of false front lines where they'll be dealing it back. But right now, all the growth we see, 12-pack, don't get me wrong, 12-pack cans are still the number one selling SKU by a long shot in stores. But the up-and-comer to me has been that single serve. And I think convenience stores have done a better job than anybody else because the C-store operators, NACS was just last week. So NACS was done in Atlanta, and it kind of conflicted with NBWA dates, but we can fix that in the future where we don't take all of our distributors and all of our manufacturers away from the biggest trade channel and all of our C-store shoppers. We got to find a way to merge those together or keep them apart so I can go to two places at once. But the C-store folks, they understand their shopper, and it's not just me going into a 7-Eleven or a Quick Trip or a Sheetz or a Cumberland Farms and picking up a 12-pack or a suitcase. It's not that. It's me going in after I pitch a doubleheader. I'm going to grab a couple of single serves, whether it's 16s, whether it's 24s, whether it's a 19-2, doesn't make a difference. I'm going to buy a couple road apples because I don't want to throw a 12-pack in my back seat. I want to be able to enjoy something right now. I'm not drinking and driving, by the way. I'm not promoting that. But they know their shopper. They know their shopper is a single-serve shopper. Pricing, like I said, has gone to a threshold in our category. And I think the single-serve offers the consumer an affordable package. It offers the retailer a way to expand his or her assortment and variety by offering single-serve packages on a cooler door or two cooler doors or four linear feet or eight linear feet in a non-C-store operation. And also, it allows a consumer, think about this, Carrie. I could spend, and there's two basic beer math equations on this one. I can buy three 24-ounce cans for $4.99, $3.99. You can see these twofer and threefer deals. Three 24-ounce cans is equal to a six-pack. I'm pretty sure that math is still right, right? Okay. Yes. So and I can spend $3.99 or $4.99 for three 24s, or I can spend $8.99 and buy a six-pack. Beer math comes into play on that one. That's the one end. The other end, and I cite Voodoo, the Voodoo Ranger portfolio on this one, is that they have done an unbelievable job at going outside, I think, of who their core, and I always hated this term, we're a craft beer. Every beer is made with a craft brewer's loving hands. We know that. I don't want to be seen in a convenience store. That's not my DNA. Bullshit. If someone's buying beer there, I want my beer being, and I cite Mr. Hackett for that. He didn't want Corona just in Mexican restaurants or bars. He didn't want them in just ethnic stores. He wanted it everywhere. And that's why Corona is what it is today. The distributors got it everywhere. Bill was brilliant about that. Jim Sabia, he was one of the smartest he is the smartest marketing guy out there now. Anyway, they did all the right things. Voodoo is now out there, and I can buy a 19.2-ounce can for a couple bucks. It's not cheap, but I can buy a 19.2 with a high ABV. And a consumer says, wait a minute, I can spend under $4 and I can get a 19.2 with a 6% or above ABV. count me in. I'm getting that. And I can get different styles of it. You want an Imperial? You got an Imperial. Yeah, what do you want? Anyway, that's where we are right now. You want a Juicy? I can get you a Juicy. Want a Hazy? I got a Hazy for you. So they're getting all the store visits I do, all the market visits I do. I see a demographic on the Ranger portfolio that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 1989, when that brewery was founded, they never would have seen themselves being purchased in little neighborhood liquor stores or neighborhood convenience stores or Home D's by the demographic profile that's picking them up now. It's from dorm room, legal drinking age dorm rooms, by the way. It's from dorm room consumers to what I'll call street doorway consumers. Everybody's buying it because it's high octane beer. It tastes great. It's in a single serve can and I can afford $4. That's what I'm saying. That's where the retailers are right now. It's all about understanding that shopper and making sure he or she has a reason to come back to their store. Let me make it easy for them to find the product that they're looking for. Let me be in stock. Let me offer variety and assortment. Let me offer different price options for them. Mm. That's what it's about in my mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a lot of those, like you said, you know, they don't necessarily change from year to year, right? Some of these are fundamentals. Like, I liked how you kind of said, like, you know, their overarching goals. How do I get more foot traffic? How do I build loyalty? Well, you got to appeal to what's the consumer's looking for. Flavors. I think the health and wellness is interesting. Certainly the non-alc, the single serve. It's also interesting to me on the 12-pack side. You know, you had mentioned like, okay, this is the animal, this is the beast, the 800-pound gorilla, right? That's where the volume's at, but it's no longer of value because the price is going up. What do you kind of see, I guess, maybe just to kind of focus on the 12 packs, because interesting to me, it's the biggest package taking price. What's your sense in terms of how that might affect volume or the overall, you know, sort of economics of that package?
Yep. So here I do definitely have three answers on that one. Number one is David did a price elasticity, price gap study for the industry. I think it was 2 months ago. I was either in the July or the August monthly letter. And he talked about price elasticity. And it's not just about price to consumer, but it's about price gap between each of the tiers or the segments of beer. We did wine and spirits, but we didn't produce it in our monthly letter. Anyway, it's all about price sensitivity right now. What we said was pricing for the beer category as an aggregate has been way above wine and spirits, and it's made beer is unaffordable a word? Because if it's not, fix me on this one, but it's made it unaffordable for a lot of shoppers who have a tight budget. And we have priced some of our brands way beyond the blue collar, the white collar, the hardworking person's budget. And they've left to buy spirits or wine or a spirits-based RTD. We've lost them because of pricing. That was bucket number one, is we've pushed pricing up. Bucket number two on that one is we look at the category in aggregate, but we decompose it. So are imports priced too high? Well, we're probably at some thresholds, but there's some packages. There are some packages in there that can afford to take price up. There are definitely some 12-pack glass and some 12-pack can that can afford to take price up because they're very inelastic. As they take price up, there's no effect on the sales rates. It actually increases volume and the profits go up. And we cite, there's a couple big brands that have been very cautious on their price to consumer or price to retailer or price to distributor. They've been very cautious on that one. There's a lot of room for taking price on some of these fast moving, high velocity products and packages out there. But as a whole, category has been way above cola, our CPI. It's been above our competitive sets. We messed that up. Within that, this is bucket two. There are key packages on key brands, key styles that we've got room to take price up and not worry about a negative impact on volume. And then the third bucket for me on this one is I think InBev back in 08, 09, when they paid their $52 billion for Anheuser-Busch, these bankers wanted to get that money back as quick as they could. And I remember I remember the industry taking one or two price increases a year. And I think, and this is back in 09 and 10 now, I can't remember what I had for breakfast today, but if I think back then, part of their strategy was to recoup all that $52 billion they had spent, and they bought AB at half price, because remember the euro and the dollar were 2-1. So anyway, I digress. And what they did was they wanted to close that price gap between below premium and premium, and hopefully that Busch and Natty shopper would trade up to Bud Light and everything would be good. It didn't happen because those price gaps stayed the same. What we've seen, and not since Dylan Mulvaney, but we've seen this way back in time, is that the consumer that can't afford to buy their Bud, Miller, or Coors anymore, those are the three primary premium brands. I could put Yuengling in there too. They have found alternative brands in Pabst. Pabst is a great beer, great value, great quality. I've got Pabst. I'm on board. I can buy my Busch. I can buy my Miller High Life. I buy my Miller High Life in 12-pack glass because it's a champagne of beer, and that's what I remember drinking as a kid. Or I can buy my Keystone. I can buy all the Coors Banquet, all these other brands in those categories. Lone Star down in Texas is a huge winner down there. But I look across every category, every market, or every retailer, and I've got price tiers. And I think that was one of the things that beer has to offer that we oftentimes take for granted, is if I can't afford to buy my Blue Moon, or I can't afford to buy my Corona Extra, or I can't afford to buy my Mick Ultra, I can go and I can get myself a PBR, or I can get myself a Yuengling Flight, or I can get myself a Busch Light. I can do that. And there's different levels for us. And I think what we're going to see, Carrie, is a growth in that below premium segment at the expense of premium beer. And one of the things that we didn't talk about with the retailers was they've got to make sure that real estate they set aside for beer, 100 feet, 100 linear feet, we're getting more and more stuff trying to jam into that 100 linear feet, whether it's wine, whether it's wine-based RTDs, whether it's spirits-based RTDs, malt-based RTDs, non-alcohol, whatever it's going to be, it's getting jammed in there. Beer space hasn't grown. It just hasn't grown. So they've got to make sure that they manage that shelf space for profits. And everybody was worried sick since the Bud Light situation that premium space was going to get whacked. And it's premium is about 30% of the volume, 25% of the dollars across the total U.S. And they've got 30% of the pack out. No problem. Because Bud Light was the number one selling brand and it fell down 30% and it's still down 30%, premium is going to get whacked. No, it's not. Retailers go, no, it's our number one moneymaker. It's our number one volume driver. That Bud Light shopper may have left Bud Light, but they're buying Miller Light and they're buying Coors Light and they're buying Light Lager from Yuengling and they're buying Pabst. I'm keeping it just the way it is. So they've got to reallocate facings and pack out by brand, not necessarily by segment. And I think there's a wait and see attitude for a spring, seeing what happens in Q4 to determine what's going to happen in spring sets. But spring is going to be, I think, an eye opener. In spite of what rhetoric you may have read or heard or seen published, spring is still up in the air right now, spring sets.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll talk again then and see what's going on.
I hope we talk before then, but sure, we can put it on the book. Yes.
Well, you'll have more data to share with them. Well, this is great. So one of the things, so people are listening to this like, wow, this is great information. They want to work with you or they want to talk to you. They want to connect with you. And maybe tell us a little bit about how you would, how you work with your customers, your clients now, and what that might look like if somebody's listening and wants to connect with you.
Yeah. So if people want to get a hold of me, Carrie, they can obviously go to you. They know you better than they know me. And you can just send their contact information along to me or connect us. That's fine to do that. But what we do with our customers is, number one is, we're going to ask you three questions. What do you want to accomplish? Tell me what keeps you awake at night. What's your business plan? Or what's your objective? What do you want us to do for you? That's number one. Number two is what kind of strategies do you have in place right now? Business strategies, portfolio strategies, pricing strategy. What do you got? Retail strategies. What do you have in mind? Because I want to see if they align with where you want to go. So if your business plan is to grow by 10% and your marketing strategies are to take price up 10%, that might not get you there. That just might not do that. And then I want to know, we're going to ask you what your tactics are about people, about class of trade, about styles of beer, about distributor relationships. We're going to ask you those three basic questions. And then obviously is, tell me what you want us to do over the next 30 days, 90 days, because I'm going to do a needs assessment with each person that reaches out to me. What are your strengths? Where do you need help? What do you want us to do for you? That's how we determine whether we take on a client or not. And if we take on a client, it's not, I'm going to turn on a data source as you're going to drown in that data. We're going to feed you what you need. We're going to analyze it. We're going to tell you what the data says. We're going to tell you how to use it. And we're going to tell you one or two, three things that you ought to be doing with that data. Take this to your retailer. Here's the message for your brand to your retailer. These are the stores you ought to be talking to your distributor about getting distribution in. These are the consumers you ought to be thinking about targeting. And you don't even have a beer in their style or that package format or package size that they're drinking. That's what we do. So, and again, we have basically 10 pillars of our business units, and from packaging and flavor companies all the way through the retail strategies, distributor portfolio, federal government on mergers and acquisitions, all the way down to when people finally pick that product up off the shelf. We touch them all. And it's kind of a cool thing. People do things better than I do all the time. But I think all the 10 steps from the time seeds go in the ground to the time people pick it up, we connect all those dots together. And that's the fun part for me and everybody who works with me. That's what we like to do.
Yeah, anyway. I love it. That's great stuff. And it's so important too, because there's so much data out there, but to be able to sort of interpret it and make sense and then summarize it, do this, this, and this. Boy, yeah. I'm sure that's breath of fresh air for a lot of people too listening.
I got chastised once. Like, we used to bring a lot of our manufacturers in to meet with our retail customers, because we would meet with C-level executives all the way down to the beverage alcohol or beverage buyer or beer buyer, wine buyer, spirits buyer. And I used to bring them in. I would go in with our brewer customers or vintner or distiller customers, and we would build the presentation, and I would give the presentation to the retailer, because I knew where the retailer wanted to go. I knew what his or her strategies were. I knew the data. I knew where my customer wanted to go. And I would give the five slides, four slides, usually a fifth slide is thank you. But it's a four slide presentation on here's the situation. Here's your opportunity. Here's the idea. Here's the benefits. Let's go. I would give those. And finally, I had a big, big retailer, he was in charge of, he was a chief merchandising officer for this big, huge ACV, all commodity volume retailer. He pulled me aside after this board meeting. And he said, hey, listen, he says, you got to make a decision for your company. We love having you here, quarterly meetings, board meetings. We love having you talk to us about the industry. We pay you to do that. You got to make a call whether you're going to take money from your brewer customers and present to us, or you're going to take money from us and be, what did he call it? Like an unbiased, a non-biased consultant, because you can't do both. So we no longer bring our manufacturing customers with us to presentations. We can't do that anymore, but we'll set you up with the business review. We'll give you the PowerPoint. We'll give you the data. Go for it. And that was a lesson that was fun. And anyway, I digress. Sorry. I went off on a tangent on that one, man.
That's great. Hey, the tangents, that's where the gold is. So as always, Bump, fantastic information. And we'll put all the contact information you know, in the post and the notes so people can reach out to you and get that one-on-one help. So thank you, my man. I really appreciate your time and your insights and all the good stuff we talked about today.
Thanks, Kerry. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Have a great Halloween. All right. I want to see your costume. I want to see pictures of the costume.
It's anyway, going to get
well. I love being with you, man. I love seeing it. And hopefully I'll see you up in Massachusetts one of these days. All right.
That sounds good, Bob. Thank you.
Take care of yourself. Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you for listening to the Craft Brewery Financial Training Podcast, where we combine beer and numbers so that you can improve financial results in your brewery. For more resources, tools, guides, and online courses, visit craftbreweryfinancialtraining.com. And don't forget to sign up for the world-famous Craft Brewery Financial Training newsletter. Until next time, get out there and improve financial results in your brewery today.